It starts with Reuven. It goes to Shimon. Then to Gad, Yehuda, Yisachar. And not only does it tell us how many people were in each Shevet, but it also lists or says how they were counted. So when it talks about Reuven, it says they were counted b'mispar shemot, the number of names, which means they didn't just give, let's say, the machasita sheker, and they would count the amount of coins. That would just be a number. But rather, they were counted by name. Each name had to be counted individually. Bemisfar shemot legulgelotam. Gulgolet is a skull. So each person was counted by name, and legulgelotam also, he was counted by his skull, by his head. That's Reuven. Shimon, again over there it says, Bemisfar Shemot Legulgelotam. We're in the beginning of Sefer Bamidbar. There too, they were counted by name according to their heads. The rest of the Shevatim, Gad, Yehuda, Yisachar, Zebulun, it lists all of them, Menashe, Binyamin, Dan, Asher, Naphtali. The rest of them, when it talks about how Moshe and Aaron counted them, it says, Bemispar Shemot. They were counted by name. No mention of Gulgelotam, their head. So Reuven, Shimon, gets counted by name according to their head. But the rest of the Shevatim only are counted by their name. What is behind this difference? So if you look in the Ibn Ezra, he writes that the Torah just said it twice. It said it by Reuven and by Shimon. And the rest are the same, but it didn't have to list it again. It wrote it two times, and you're able to understand on your own that the rest of them were done the same way. The truth is that usually goes against the rule. The rule usually is, if the Torah says it once, then you could learn for the rest. If it says it twice, it's the opposite. It means only here and nowhere else. That's how the Ibn Ezra explains. We can spend more time trying to understand it, but that's not for today. But I'd like to share with you a different explanation based on the Midrash. The Ramban brings this Midrash. Before he brings the Midrash, he says, that is a tremendous zechut, tremendous merit, that each Jew was counted by Moshe Rabbeinu and his brother. He says, "Badavar hazeh yiyeh lo zechut v'chayim," a great merit and a source of life to get a beracha from Moshe and Aharon, like today we get beracha from rabbis or great people. He says that when you get a blessing from Moshe and Aharon, they put their eyes on you for good. And that eye will bring beracha to you. Yevakshu alehem rahamim, they'll pray for you. So it wasn't, says the Ramban, it's not stam, they just came one by name. It was to give them goodness, it was to give them merit, it was to give them blessing. And then he says, says Ramban, I saw a midrash. The midrash says, "Bemispar shemot legulgelotam," quoting the pasuk that we learned, that says it twice. And you count them with their name and their head. Amar lo HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Hashem told Moshe Rabbeinu, limnotam, when you count them, bechavod ubigdula. The counting is not meant only to find out the number. It's meant to show them honor and to show them greatness. Lekol ehad ve'ehad. Each one. The Midrash obviously is bothered by the word legulgelotam. Says count them by their head. Seemingly, you could have just written the names on a piece of paper and let Moshe Rabbeinu take the names and bless them. Doesn't have to see each one face to face. But the Midrash says, no, he did have to see each one face to face. Because part of the job was that he needs to give them honor, he says, and gedulah. And show them how special and great they are. That was part of the counting. So it wasn't just to count, and it wasn't just to give them a blessing and a merit, but it was also to impart honor and greatness to them. That could only be done one person at a time. Lo tiyeh omer l'rosh ha-mishpacha. Says the Midrash, Hashem told Moshe Rabbeinu, don't just go to the head of the family and say, how many people in your family? Write down the names. Ela, kulehon, all of them. Yehon ovrim lefanecha, each one, one by one, in front of Moshe Rabbeinu. Be'ema ubkavod, be'atam oneotam. They come in front of Moshe Rabbeinu with awe and honor. And Moshe Rabbeinu also counts them with honor and gedulah. That's what the Midrash says. So the Gulgelotam is coming to tell you that he has to see them one by one individually and give them the kabod and the gedulah. So how come only Reuven and Shimon were the ones that got this Benispar Shemot legulgelotam? Why every other Shevet only got Mispar Shemot? I saw in a sefer called Birkat Ish from a Talmid Chacham in Staten Island in Brooklyn. He says something very beautiful. That Reuven, Shevet Reuven, if we see in this week's parasha, were from the big troublemakers in the story of Korah. In fact, if you look at the first pasuk in the parasha, you'll see that Korah, who was from Shevet Levi, it says he took with him Datan va'Aviram. We always find them when there's trouble. Datan va'Aviram are known. Whenever there's problems, you see them. Datan va'Aviram, who were the sons of Eliab, on Ben Pelet, and the pasuk ends and says, Bnei Reuven. These were from the family of Reuven. So who was Korah? Who did he get together with in his revolution against Moshe Rabbeinu? He found from the children of Reuven. And then it says he took with him 250 important people. And most of them were from Reuven too. And they went against Moshe Rabbeinu. So we find that Shevet Reuven went head-to-head against Moshe and his leadership. Shimon also, we're going to be reading in a few weeks about the famous story of the Jewish people when they sinned in the desert with the idol worship of Baal Peor that was brought to them. They were seduced by the girls of Moab, as the Pasuk says, Vayeshev Yisrael Bashitim. When Am Yisrael was in this area called Shittim, in the desert, Vayahel Am is not as Benot Moab. They had very big challenges with the daughters, with the girls of Moab. They set them up. They seduced them. And that brought them to even idol worship. As the Pasuk says, the Jewish people got connected to Baal Peor. It was a terrible moment in Jewish history. And over there the Pasuk says, Hashem told Moshe Rabbeinu, you got to do something. Those who are committing such terrible averot need to be punished. So the Pasuk says, Vayomer Moshe Shoftei Israel. Moshe Rabbeinu tells the judges of the Jewish people, Hirgu Ish Anashab Hanitzmadin Lebaal Peor. You got to find all those who were guilty of this terrible sin of idol worship, which is punishable by death. He says, go find them. And you got to take them to Beit Din, to court. Of course, you need witnesses. There's a whole system. But that's the judge's job. Moshe Rabbeinu tells them, go. You got a job to do. And then the Pasuk says, when this happened, it was a man from the Jewish people that came, and he brought with him a girl from Midian, a goy lady, in front of Moshe and in front of the Jewish people. Behem Abochin, and they're all crying when they saw this. So the Gemara in Masechet Ab Sanhedrin gives us some more detail to the story. The Gemara says, that when Moshe Rabbeinu told the judges of Am Yisrael to take action against the sinners of idol worship, it says, Halach Shifto Shel Shimon. The tribe of Shimon went Etzel Zimri ben Salu, their leader, Shelumiel ben Surishadai, he's called here, Zimri ben Salu. And they said to him, Amrulo, Hen Danin Dinele Pashot. It says the judges are killing people. I guess they were part of that. Beata Yoshev Veshotek. You, our leader, sitting here quiet. It seems that a large amount of people from Bnei Shimon were involved. And they tell him, their leader, where are you? This is what we need, leadership. The judges are killing us. Ma'asa, what did he do? He went and he gathered 24,000 from his Shevet. It says here, from Israel, but they explain, I think it's from his Shevet. And he brought this Goya lady. How's he going to stop this? He's got to do something to break the leadership. That's where it's emanating from. Moshe gave the command to the judges. It says, he took her in front of Moshe Rabbeinu. Amar lo. He says to Moshe, Ben Amram, calls him not by such a respectful name. Ben Amram, the son of Amram. Zo asura o muteret. Tell this Goya,
She's permitted or she's forbidden?
Ve'im tomar asura. And before you answer and you tell me she's forbidden, bat yitro mi hitira lecha? Who allowed you to marry the daughter of Yitro, the goy? She's also Midianit.
So this leader of Shimon came to save his people
by pulling the rug from under Moshe. Now, of course, the difference between the daughter of Yitro and what he was bringing is the difference between heaven and earth. Why? Rashi himself over there says, it's not a question. Because Moshe married her before Matan Torah. Before Matan Torah, that was permitted. Here he's bringing her after Matan Torah. Can't compare, but when it comes to trying to undermine leadership, it doesn't really matter what the truth is. As long as you could sound like you're doing good, saying good, people are looking for a way to undermine, so they'll believe and they'll go with it. At that moment, it says that Moshe Rabbeinu forgot the halacha, that he's supposed to kill a guy like this. And that's why Behema Bochim, all the people were watching, they're all crying, they know what's going on. You have Moshe Rabbeinu, you have this leader, he's coming against him, it was like a mini Korah, was coming against Moshe Rabbeinu's leadership. And they were crying until Pinchas came and saved the day. So we find twice in the Torah tribes that went against the leadership of Moshe Rabbeinu. Individuals they were, but tribes that were mentioned was Reuven and Shimon. That's why, because Moshe Rabbeinu, Hashem saw this, we'll call it, inner desire within these tribes, wherever it came from. So therefore, Moshe Rabbeinu, before these events, he used a special piece of advice of Shlomo HaMelech that we learned yesterday. Yesterday we learned that Shlomo HaMelech taught us that a person's thoughts are broadcast and they land in the heart of those he's thinking about. When you think thoughts of appreciation, of value, of ahava, of love towards somebody, even if you don't say a word to them, even if they're not in front of you, there's a language of the heart and a communication of the heart, says Shlomo HaMelech, that most people are not aware of. That's why you need Shlomo HaMelech. We know about communication of the words that come out of our mouth. We know communication of body language, facial expressions, hand motions. That's the only communication that we know, either with your mouth or with your facial expression, or if someone is far away, you gotta write something. We don't have any other form of communication. How else would someone know what I want to tell them? Come Shlomo HaMelech with her most powerful new form of communication, that actually what you think about someone, it somehow lands in that someone's heart. He may not know if you asked him exactly how this happened, but you're able to register feelings in another person through your feelings and your thoughts. It's unbelievable. There are certain waves of the heart that are able to transfer. That's what we learned yesterday. Kamayim apanim lapanim ken lev adam laadam. There's a connection between the hearts of people. That's what we learned yesterday. But the pasuk, which we didn't do yesterday, is saying an even greater hidush. The first one is very great, but there's even a bigger hidush. Shlomo HaMelech says that not only does it register by them, but it will develop similar feelings in their heart for you. The wild hidush. So not only if I feel love towards somebody, will they feel the love, even though I don't say a word to them? But it also turns within them the love reciprocated towards me. And if I have feelings of hatred, not only will that register by them, it also will create a feeling of hatred towards me. It's a greater hidush. So A, it's broadcast, and somehow it develops right back at you. Kamayim apanim lapanim. The way you look in the water with your face, you smile to the water, the face in the water smiles to you. If you give a face of anger, that's the face you're gonna get. It's a cute story I once told you about a guy who lived somewhere in Russia, very far from normal civilization, lives on a farm, has nothing. And it's his first visit. After 30 years, he goes to the big city. And he checks into a hotel. They give him the key to his room. It's on the 7th floor. He has to walk up the steps. He walks up to the first story of the steps. And all of a sudden, he sees this man that's staring him down. So he stares him down back. And the man stares him again. Now he says, I'm going to get away from him. He runs up to the steps. He goes to the second floor. Guess who he sees over there? Same guy. Staring him down. He stares him down. Guy stares him back. He goes like this to him. The guy goes like this to him. Tries to get away from him. He goes to the third floor. He sees him again. Can't get away from the guy. Now he goes nose to nose with him. The guy puts his nose closer. The other guy puts his nose closer. Now he's getting really nervous. Who's this guy stalking him? Goes down to the front office on the front desk to complain. They're trying to understand what this guy's talking about. Who is this guy that's coming up the steps with him? He says, they can't understand the story. And then they realize that this guy never saw a mirror in his life. Well, he never saw his face. He never ever saw his face. Possible, isn't it? And for the first time, he met himself. And every time he looked at the mirror, he saw an angry guy. And the picture came right back at him. So now they're not going to go explain to him now how mirrors work. They don't listen. We know about this guy. We know him. He's a good guy.
He's
not a bad guy. I'm telling you. Take our advice. He's a very interesting man, this man that's following you. He says, the way you look at him, that's how he looks at you. So if you smile to him, he smiles back. If you wave to him, he waves back. You throw him a kiss, he throws you a kiss back. Same guy. He says, can't be, I'm telling you, try it. He goes, he waves him a kiss, the guy says, he's right. What a beautiful guy. The whole trip, he's saying hello to him. Can't wait to get back to the hotel. It's a cute story. You would almost see to be an insulting story because it's too cute. But it's the reality that Shlomo HaMelech is teaching us. Such an unbelievable reality. It's unbelievable, Rip. But take it to the bank. It's one of the key elements of a great relationship. Kamayim apanim lapanim. The way you feel about someone, that's what you're going to inspire within them. It doesn't mean automatically they're going to love you. They have free choice still. But you're going to be able to make a change in them where they're going to have a greater desire to do that. So people talk about others that don't love them. People feel like a victim. I'm not loved by this one, by my spouse. I'm not loved by my children. I'm not loved by my friends. I'm not loved by my rabbi, by my teachers, by my students. It's such a big part of our lives. Constantly assessing who loves us, who doesn't love us. Very often frustrated by the lack of ahava and the lack of respect that we receive from people that we expect more from. Such a big part of our lives. And it's a very frustrating part of our life. Because what could you do to make another person respect you, love you, admire you? But Shlomo HaMelech says that you can do something about it. And in fact, it could be that it's only a reflection of yourself. So do something about it. You want to be beloved? You have to be an ohev. Plant the seeds within them to look at you differently. Some explain, the Or HaHaim HaKadosh explains that this was the weapon that Yehuda used against Yosef. When he saw that there was nothing left to do, when they caught Binyamin with the goblet and they put him in jail and there was no hope to go back to their father without Binyamin, the Pasuk says, Vayigash elav Yehuda. Yehuda went close to him and he started to tell him about the story from the time they came till then. And the Or HaHaim HaKadosh says, what does it mean by Yigash Elav? What do you mean he came close to him? He's a king. You don't get close to the king. And what's the purpose? Talk from where you are. Because he's not deaf. Says the Or HaHaim HaKadosh that Yehuda used the tool of Shlomo HaMelech. Kamayim apanim lapanim. Nithakem Yehuda, which means he became a wise person. Lehatot lev Yosef alav lerahamim. To change the heart of Yosef, to have compassion on him and his brothers. How are you going to change the feelings of Yosef that they thought was against them? How would they change that? Vehikriv dato urtzono elav leohavo ulhabevo. Vayigash elav means not necessarily physically he got close to him. Vayigash elav,
He was bringing his heart to feel love for this man that's giving them such Gehinam. All he's done is give them problems. And normally, in such a relationship, you have feelings of hatred towards the person who's giving you a hard time. Especially, he's an idol worshiper, at least is what they thought. So automatically, you don't have respect for him. But Yigash Elav Yehuda says, the Or HaChaim, you know what Yehuda did? To change the tide? He said, I need to show this man Ahava. I need not to show him, I need to feel Ahava. But Yigash Elav, he started, says, Vehikrivdato. Which means he had to work on his mahshaba, like we said yesterday. A person is able to change the way he thinks about somebody. He started looking for the reasons to love this man. Vayigash elav, so that he could turn on his feelings of love and compassion. Or HaChaim HaKadosh. I once saw a most beautiful explanation about Yosef and Yaakov. We know the Pasuk says that after Yosef disappeared and they told him, he was eaten by a wild animal who saw his clothing full of blood. It says they all came to console him. Lo alenu, we know what consolation is. A person loses a loved one. First few days, a heart gets a little easier. After a month, it's a little easier. After a year, it's a little easier. That's the progress of how mourning and when you miss somebody that you love happens. So it says here, all his children, Banav, Kol Banav, Vekol Benotav, all his sons, all his daughters, they got up Lenahamo to console him. They saw their father within the normal time of consolation. Can't expect consolation to work day one, not day three, not day seven. But they saw that in the normal course of consolation, of when he's supposed to move on, he's not moving on. So they took it upon themselves to go and console him. Abba, enough. Okay, he died, but what can we do? We gotta move on. And he refused to be consoled. So surprising. Such a giant of a human being, Yaakov Avinu, would be refused to console, to be consoled, and is still crying on spilled milk. It's over. We would accuse someone like that of being not wise. It's done. He refused to be consoled. By Yomer, he says, the feeling is so great. I feel I'm going to go to my grave in mourning. And he continued to cry. Unbelievable. It's unimaginable to see Yaakov Avinu like that. Yes, a great tragedy, but at what point do you move on? Comes Rashi, Alav HaShalom, and explains to us why this happened. Because it's very surprising that Yaakov would take this course. Says Rashi, there's something deeper here. You know, on day one, could you expect someone
day one of a tragedy to get over it? Would you tell a guy day one, come on, move on, get over it? Nobody would do, no one would do that. It's like, this was not day one. This was day 365. But day one, we understand it's so fresh, it's so strong, it's so painful. You don't tell someone, move on. You do that when the time passes. Because there's a process that happens, says Rashi. The process is that as a person is a gezerah, that the met, that the person who's deceased is yishtakeyach min alev, that the met gets forgotten from the heart. It's a process. And that's why day seven is not like day one. Day 30 is not like day seven. 12 months later is not like the first month. It's a process. What's the process? It said, Hashem made a decree on a mit. He made a decree on the dead person that he is forgotten and gets forgotten slowly from the heart of those that love him. Very nice. So how come over here it didn't work? That's why we go a month later, a year later, say, okay, Atkan, that's it. Got to move on. We could say that to somebody because we're relying on this decree because day 30 is not like day one. Says Rashi Alav HaShalom, he says, this decree that Hashem made is only on a person who is met. She'al ha-met nigzera gezera she'ishtakach min alev. It's only by the met that Hashem made such a decree. Ve'lo al ha-chai, but not on someone alive. Yosef was alive. He wasn't buried. Says the Panim Yafot. Look how beautiful this Panim Yafot is. The Panim Yafot says, what's the idea behind this? I mean, Yaakov thought he died. They all thought he died. What's the difference what the reality is? At the end of the day, if I thought someone is dead, so the process should take place. What's the idea that even though you think someone is not alive, but still you don't forget them? Says the Panim Yafot, listen to this question here. He says, how come Rashi says that the decree is on the met, the decree is on the dead person that he should be forgotten? Really, the decree should have been on the heart of the person that will forget. What do you mean? Is a decree on the dead. The decree is not on the dead. The decree is on the heart of the living person that he'll forget the dead. But Rashi says, no. Gezerah she'al ha-met nigzerah gezerah. On the dead person is a decree. That yishtakach min alev. Says the Panim Yafot, let me explain to you something. He says, the reason why a person is able to forget the dead person is because there's no more broadcast of feelings and love from the person who died. Since they died, there's no more broadcast coming out of them. And that's how the forgetful process takes place. When your heart is not receiving the broadcast from the other heart, so slowly you're able to forget. But when someone is alive, so even though you don't know he's alive, you have no idea where he is. He's 1,000 miles away. But the broadcast of his feelings towards you are still there. And therefore, you will not forget. The gezeras on the met. Because that's where the forgetfulness comes from.
from his lack of broadcasting. And that's why by Yosef, he was alive. And he says so beautiful, such beautiful words he says. He says that's why later on, when Yosef became the Melech, he became very successful. If you remember, he called his son Menashe. Why did he call his son Menashe? Because he saw Nashari Elohim. He said, I feel like I'm forgetting. Kol Bet Avi, I'm forgetting my father. I'm forgetting my family. Says the Panim Yafot. That when Yosef became successful and started to forget about his family, they saw that Yaakov started to be a little better. And that's why when Yehuda spoke to Yosef, quoting his father told them, Ve'ahiv met. Binyamin's brother died. Because since Yosef started to forget about his father started to forget about him, and he actually believed he died. Ve'ahiv met. My father told us his brother died. You're taking Binyamin now? His father died. His brother died. He says, yes, because Yosef, Nashani Elohim, he started to forget his father. His father forgot about him. The decree worked. Yeah. And says the Panim Yafot, that's why there is within every single one of us, there's a reminder every once in a while. Sometimes we don't let the reminder take effect and we don't let it come out to fruition. He said, but there's a reminder somewhere inside of us to connect to Hashem, to love Hashem, to do more in our lives. Sometimes we have these feelings randomly. I gotta do more. I feel like, what do you feel? Hashem is invisible. What's missing in your life? They're not, I feel empty. I feel I'm missing something. What are you feeling? Says the Panim Yafot, the Pasuk says in Tehillim, look at the words of David HaMelech. Tzame'a nafshi l'Elohim. Says David HaMelech, I feel a thirst to Hashem. Le'el Hai, to the living God. Hashem is not just some entity outside the planet. Le'el Hai, He's alive. Says the Panim Yafot, you know why you feel this love that you want to get closer to Hashem, you want to grow, you want to learn, you want to do, you want to be inspired. Like Raymond said today, I came to be inspired. Why does he want to be inspired for? Because of this. Because Hashem is high, He's alive, and He loves us. Hashem says, Ahavti etu, I love you. Since there is a living God that loves us, it stirs within us the desire to love Him too. Of course, we still have to make choices. We still have to overcome challenges. But the feelings that, hey, I need to be inspired, I need to upgrade, I need to... Well, where is that coming from? Oh, Tzame'a nafshi l'Elohim, you know why? Le'el Hai. Hashem is alive. And that feeling from the living God gets very much felt by my lid. And even though I don't know anything, even though I may not be missing anything in my life, I feel, oh, I'm missing someone. I'm missing something. Unbelievable. Kamayim apanim apanim is a powerful system that Hashem created in this world that most people
don't take advantage of for the good. They may fall from it, not even realizing that their feelings are being broadcast to their children, to their spouse, to their students. You feel a certain way about a student, he knows it. But you'll say, I didn't say anything. You're right, you can't prove it in a court of law. There's no two edim. But the guy feels it. He feels that you think he's a bum. He feels if you respect him or not. He feels if you think he's valuable. Feels it. You don't say one word. So we're always using this tool. We just don't know it's there, and therefore very often we may end up getting hurt from it. Vayigash elav Yehuda says, let me use this tool. I have this man that's really upset with us. He's hurting us. He's doing all kinds of things to us. How am I going to change that? Most powerful man in the world. What am I going to do about that? Oh, vayigash elav. Maybe if I got my heart moving, I'll stir his heart. And that's what happened. Yosef's heart started, he couldn't anymore. Couldn't hold it anymore. Unbelievable. That's what Yaakov did to Esav. He sent messengers to Esav. They told him, oh, it's coming with 400 men. What do you want 400? What do you want 400 men? They're coming to fight. They're coming to wipe you out. He's still angry. Pasuk says, Vayisa Yaakov enav. Yaakov looked and saw Esav ba, he was coming, ve'imo arba me'ot ish. You don't have 400 men coming to you, you know, for a barbecue. You don't need them for that. What does the Pasuk say? Vayishta'u arza. He bowed down, Yaakov did, sheva pe'amim. He bowed 7 times, ad gishto ad ahib, until he brought himself closer to his brother. What does that mean, until he brought himself closer to his brother? Don't bring yourself close to your brother. Until he met his brother. No, every time he bowed down, he worked on how he could show and feel love to Esav. Esav hates you, wants to wipe you out, so what are you going to do? So he went 7 times, ad gishto, vayigash elav, until he brought his heart to be able to love Esav, even though that wasn't such an easy test. Ad gishto ad ahir, until he got close to see his brother and to love him like a brother. It is then, that's why, what happened when finally they actually met up. Says, Vayarots Esav likrato. What happened to the 400 men? Says, Esav ran towards him, Vayhavbekehu, and he hugged him, and he kissed him, and they cried. What happened to the 400 people? Gone. How? Kamaim apanim lapanim. He knew how to use this God-given, miraculous creation of stirring his feelings for his brother. This happens by ahavat. Happens with love. It happens with hatred. Whatever you broadcast, it's a mirror. Listen to this Mishnah. In Masechet Yevamot, the Mishnah talks about a very big leniency. Very big leniency. Huge leniency. Unheard of, this leniency. You have a married woman. A married woman is obviously forbidden to every man except the husband. It's the worst of the 3 cardinal sins of Judaism for anyone to get close to. A husband goes away. Imagine those days especially. No phones. No camera, nothing. Dad goes to the Far East for a few months just to come back home. 3 months, he doesn't show up. 4 months, 6 months, a year, not even show up. But where is he? Maybe he got killed. Maybe he died. Maybe he's in jail. We have no idea. Now, if he died, it's not great news for her, but it's better than being in limbo. Because right now, as is, she's stuck. Because she's a married woman. Until we have witnesses that the guy died, she can't do anything. She can't marry anybody. So it's very hard for her. She's called the Aguna. She's stuck. So now, usually in Jewish law, we need witnesses. Two witnesses, kosher witnesses. Can't be relatives, can't be a woman, it can't be a katan, it can't be... Many rules of what is a kosher witness. Two kosher witnesses have to come and tell you, we saw the guy dead. Not we heard, we saw. That's very hard to actually happen. So here, Chachamim came, and they gave this wild leniency. They backed it up with many ramifications to protect it that shouldn't be taken advantage of. What's the leniency? They said, Hakol ne'emanim. Everyone is going to be believed to testify that this husband died. Even one witness. And even a non-kosher witness. A woman comes, says, I saw the guy die. You believe her. One. This is wild. But says the Mishnah, there are a few exceptions, and because of their relationship with this lady, we cannot accept their testimony because they may have a certain hatred towards her. And because they have a hatred, maybe they want to mess her up. To tell her that her husband died, she's going to go get married, she gets messed up. So maybe they have a certain hatred and they want her to get messed up. So therefore, they're out. Who is on this list? What a list is it? Hamota, her mother-in-law. We're afraid that her mother-in-law has certain bad feelings. She took her son. Maybe she's spending too much money that she and her husband accumulated. We make the money, they spend the money. Who knows over the years what kind of feelings developed mother-in-law to her daughter-in-law. Hey. So we're suspicious she might have some hateful feelings towards her, and she might want to mess her up. So she is not accepted in the court. Not her mother-in-law, not her mother-in-law's daughter, her sister-in-law, because she has the same feelings. Who's this girl? I'm in the family 20 years. I didn't get a house. Where did she come from? She walks around, she owns the family. She's taking all my father's wealth, my father's work. Well, you can imagine the rest. So she's out. And then a few other ones. Not important for now. Okay, we get it. But comes the Gemara and says, wait a second. How about if it was the other way around? Let's say her mother-in-law's husband is not back from a trip. Can a daughter-in-law testified that she saw her mother-in-law's husband dead? Simply, there's no reason. What hatred does she have to her mother-in-law? Her mother-in-law gave her a husband. She gives her the mother-in-law, we understand why she may have problems with her. But what would she have with her mother-in-law? Says the Gemara, no. It's also no good. You know why? Kamayim apanim lapanim. Because since her mother-in-law has hatred for her, even if she has no reason, but that hatred alone stirs hatred within her, and therefore she's out. Unbelievable. Listen to this halakha. Halakha says in Shulchan Aruch, The Rama writes in Hilchot of a person who's being asked to go up to the Torah. Now, the Halakha says, if they ask you by name to go up to the Torah, it's a very big sin if you say, I don't want to go. It's a lack of kavod Torah. They say, Shemuel ben bechavod. You don't call me by name. Ashkenazim do that. If they call you by name and you say, I don't want to go, it's a very big avera of a lack of respect to the Torah. Says the Rama, what happens? They're up to Parashat Vechukotai. In Parashat Vechukotai, there's a section over there where it's all curses. Lo alenu, velo alechem. All curses about what happens to a person who doesn't live a life, a Jewish person who doesn't live a life of a Jew. Terrible curses. So they get up to that aliyah and they invite a person to go up. Which is no problem. There's no issue to go up to aliyah that has curses. They're not cursing you. But says the Rama, what happens if you hate the Baal Koreh? I hate the guy reading. I have some issue with him. So I have not such good feelings towards him. And now I get called up to go to this aliyah. Says the Rama, Mi shehu sone l'shaliyah subo. Someone who hates the Baal Koreh, lo yaleh. Even though it's a terrible thing not to go up, he says, don't go up. Why? Because when the guy's reading, he's reading all the curses. He has all kinds of kavanot. He has all kinds of intentions for you standing next to him. You should do this, you should lose this. Mashemor. So it's so dangerous that say, I'm not going. Okay, interesting halacha. But the rabbis ask, is this Rama written the wrong way? It says, whoever hates the Hazan. Hating the Hazan is not a problem. It's only the Hazan hates you, that's the problem. If you hate the Hazan, you're not reading, who cares? The issue should be only when he hates you. Why does Shulchan Aruch say, if you hate him? So some say, you're right, it's a mistake. He meant to say, if the Hazan hates him. But the Beit Ephraim says, no. Shulchan Aruch is telling you a bigger hidush. Even if it's only you that hate him, you hate him. But once you hate him, there's a rule. Kamayim apanim lapanim. If you hate him, then the very good chance he hates you also. And therefore, don't go up. Halakha and Shulchan Aruch. The same we see in the Torah. Ki tereh hamor sona'acha. If you see the donkey of the guy you hate and he needs help, help him. Now over here they say, how could you hate him? Not allowed to hate him. Not allowed to hate him. Right? So anyway, they say he did an avera privately, only you saw, so you're allowed to hate him. But really the word sonaha means he hates you. The pasuk says, sona'acha, the guy who hates you. It should have said the guy that you hate. But again, the same rule. Not only if you hate him, even if he hates you, it's going to come back and bring hatred within yourself. Bottom line, this is a very big klal in life, in relationships. Your thoughts not only register by the person, but they even come back and are felt towards you. There's a story about a guy who came to the Baal Shem Tov. He told him,
Rabbi, I have a very big desire to meet Eliyahu HaNavi. How do I meet Eliyahu HaNavi? I have to meet him. He told him, Baal Shem Tov told him, there's a city you have to travel to. I'm going to give you the address of a certain home in that city. I want you to go there and spend Shabbat with this family. And over there, you're going to find Eliyahu HaNavi. So make sure to bring a lot of food with you. You're going to need it for Shabbat. Over there, you're going to find him. Okay, he has Emunah Shelema and his rabbi, the Baal Shem Tov. He told him to go. Finally, there he goes. Packs his suitcase, packs the food, travels for hours and hours until he gets to the city. He's looking for the house. He sees it's not a house, it's a shack. It looks like Eliyahu HaNavi lives here, but what kind of house is this? Open the door. There's a family with 10 children. He sees the house looks even worse than it did on the outside. It looks inside worse. People have no food. They have no money. They have nothing. Baruch Hashem, he brought food in. And they end up having a beautiful Shabbat together with all the food that he brought them. But only one problem. He didn't meet Eliyahu HaNavi. Okay, he's disappointed. He goes back to his rabbi, travels back to the city. He says, Rabbi, took your advice. I went to the people. I went to the house. I brought the food. I did everything. There's no Eliyahu HaNavi over there. What happened? He called him, do me a favor, go again this week. This time, I guarantee you, go to the same place, bring food with you. This Shabbat, go again, I guarantee you're going to find him. I said, Rabbi, are you sure I won't let him? No. He said, guarantee you're going to find him. Okay. He goes again with his Emunat Hachamim, he's traveling to the city, goes to the same place. Now there are kids outside in the family, playing outside. And they see this guy coming again the second week with his bags of food, his candy, food, meat. So he hears one of the kids running to the house. He says, Ima, Ima, Eliyahu HaNavi came back. He found Eliyahu HaNavi. You're looking for Eliyahu HaNavi, you have to be Eliyahu HaNavi, you'll find him. That's the way it is. So many times in life we complain about people, how they feel towards us, how they have certain claims on us, how they have... Obviously we can't say everything is going to be fixed by this. Obviously, it's not a quick fix like that. But we have what we can do to become Eliyahu HaNavi. You want to see him? You be him. You want to bring people to be more happy? You got to be happy towards them. You want people to be more loving? You got to be loving towards them. Whatever it is that you see in others towards you, you and I have the ability to make that change. Kamayim apanim lapanim. That is the rule. That's the chokhmah of Shlomo HaMelech, and that could answer why only by Reuven and Shimon Moshe Rabbeinu said to count them one by one physically and show them respect and love and gadlut. Why? Because these are the two Shevatim that Hashem saw in the future that they're going to have issues with Moshe Rabbeinu, as this week's parasha, Reuven. There seemed to be something in the genes of these tribes, Reuven and Shimon, that had certain feeling. Maybe, who knows, Reuven is the Bechor, Shimon is second. Whatever the reason, there was something about Reuven and Shimon that had certain possible bad feelings. It was like in their makeup. Hashem says to Moshe Rabbeinu, you know what you can do to fix that? Maybe you can't fix it completely. And he didn't fix it completely.
But who knows how much worse it could have been? Then there are only a few people from Reuven came. It could have been much more. What you need to do, says Hashem to Moshe Rabbeinu, you count all the people by name. But Reuven and Shimon, you got to treat them differently. Why? Because they have a certain hatred or certain bad feelings towards you. And the way you're going to fix that is by giving them extra respect, an extra kavod, an extra gedula. Exact opposite of what we do. We see someone who doesn't like us, you hate him more. No. Reuven and Shimon have this bad feeling. You go overboard for them to give them gedula and kavod. Imagine such strategies, such a feeling in relationships where a person broadcasts the feelings of ahava and appreciation and value. Not only does it land by the other person, but it even comes back to benefit the person himself. Have a wonderful day.